Good evening, my friends, and thank you for tuning into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts, as we take another deep dive into season one, this time episode 7, Legends and Lies. This is the ghost of Oceanborn Mary. Now, when we first got this show, I was told of just a few places we were going to try to get to. Oceanborn Mary was one of those cases, one that I was fascinated by, and I could not wait to get out and examine. The claims were insane. The story, romantic and strange and fun. And then there was Dr. Hans Holzer, who went to visit, but didn't necessarily like the vibe of what was going down. We're going to talk about that. This story, as I said, has it all. Pirates and young maidens saved. It was the 1700s, and people would make their way over to America on these large ships, but sometimes they would encounter pirates. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, Black Bart the Pirate. And he had actually found the ship, boarded the ship, and was about to begin pillaging and plundering when he heard a baby cry. And as legend has it, he went and sought out the baby. Brand new, beautiful baby girl about to make her way into America. And for a moment, this pirate had a twinge of common decency. And he said, I'll tell you what, if you name your daughter after my mother, Mary, I'll send you and your people on your way and nobody will die today. And the family agreed, sure, we'll name her Mary. The pirate then left his ship, came back with some trinkets, some loose pearls and a couple of plates and mugs that were meant to be Mary's. And as the story goes, this pirate would come to land a few times a year to connect with Mary, who he looked at with a lot of love and adoration. And they grew closer as she grew older, till they developed a different type of relationship. Always a strong bond between these two. And then when the pirate finally died, Mary's love for him was unyielding and she buried him under the hearth of her home, known as Oceanborn Mary's home. And that was the story that has been around and part of history for a long time in Henniker, New Hampshire. Then in, I believe it was 1900s, 1919-ish, a gentleman by the name of Gussie Roy and his mother bought the property. And they were aware of this legendary story, and they began building on it. And he would actually, you know, because she would keep in contact with the pirate, he would bring them jewels and pirate gold, and they would hide it on the property. Well, Gussie Roy, kind of the P.T. Barnum of his time, would let people rent spades from him, small shovels, so they could go out and dig up his yard for 50 cents. And if they found the treasure, they had to split part of the treasure with Gussie Roy. So this is how the story progressed. People would come to see Gussie Roy and they would see spirits in the window up above. They would see a woman in white walking the property line late at night. And it was a lot of creepy ghost stories. And this carried on to the next family and generation that bought the house as well. And that's where Dr. Hans Holzer gets called. In the 60s, there are all of these claims of the supernatural, and Dr. Holzer goes out to investigate. But there's something amiss. The medium he's brought with is not connecting with the spirit of Oceanborn Mary, Mary Wallace, or with Black Bart the pirate. There are ghosts that are making their presence known, but none of it is lining up with the history that is being told. So when it came to giving the official Hans Holzer stamp, which could put your business over, like the Whaley House being called the most haunted house in America by Dr. Hans Holzer, held some weight to it. And people sought that attention. But Dr. Holzer was not one to be fooled easily. And even though people loved this story, he knew there was something amiss. He would never go on a record and say, yes, this is haunted by the ghost of Black Bart the pirate and of Mary, Oceanborn Mary. He wouldn't do it and left. And there was a lot of fanfare about it. People were disturbed and irritated and angry at Dr. Holzer because he refused to give that nod. And that's where we come in. This is what was so exciting. You know, 50 some years later, we get the chance to go investigate this home. Now, when Dr. Holzer was first brought in, you know, he would always bring a medium with him, but he didn't. They told him to hold off, and they had a medium and the medium was telling him information. And again, it all just seemed to be too methodically done. And that's why on one of his subsequent visits, he brought his own medium and things started to get wonky. They weren't lining up with all the history that had been out there. So it was exciting for our team to get this call. And I know that Gabe Roth worked diligently going through the books and looking up all the information and trying to make this connection for us. I'm going to introduce our guests for this evening. This is, I think, hands down one of our favorite episodes in many interviews we've gone over. We've talked about this. Joining me, the one and only, ladies and gentlemen, now from the Searchers, and you know him as hashtag poor Shane, the one and only Shane Pittman. Hello, Shane.
How's it going, Dave? Thank you for having me, man.
Always a pleasure catching up with you, buddy. The ocean-born Mary House, man. I remember this was exciting for both of us. What was your initial thought when you heard this story and all the weird pieces that were involved in it?
Well, my initial thoughts was I've always wanted to. I've always been intrigued by the ocean-born Mary case. But whenever we were going over all of the stuff that Hans Holzer had in his files regarding it. Like you said, a lot of it wasn't adding up, and it just intrigued me even more because, you know, it was almost like it was a mystery that, you know, we were on, that we were trying to uncover. And it was just bizarre, all of the things that were not adding up at the initial time that we were looking into it.
And I want to remind folks that Holzer Files Season 1 and Holzer Files Season 2 are on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus. You can go catch up. They've also re-released episodes of Season 1 called Holzer Files Reopened, where there is special footage and extra bonus scenes that did not appear in the first airing of these programs. So you have to go find those on Travel Channel. I don't think they're put them up on Discovery Plus yet, but go look for Holzer Files Reopened, and you can watch them, these episodes, with some notes. And Cindy, Shane, and I were pulled together about a little over a year ago before the pandemic hit to sit down and discuss Season 1. So we cut these little bits that they inject into it, kind of like pop-up video. It's cool. So check that out. But yeah, the Ocean-Born Mary case, and I just watched the reopened episode today on it and was reminded of so many of the cool backstories. You and I had a very profound paranormal experience at this house that I want to get into later during the investigation. But behind the scenes, on programs like this, I've told you we like to dig deep and go behind the story. We also have producers and researchers that aid the cast and Gabe in getting further information, getting permission. Once Gabe has found people and a story, then our field segment producers go to work. And that is a tough job. That is not easy to do, to dig into a story 50, 60 years old to try to find all of the people that you need to make this an episode. And joining us is, and this is great because we have not spoken really or been together since the end of Season 1, but joining us now was our special field segment producer for the Ocean-Born Mary case and half of all of the first episodes, Chris Cagle. Hello, Chris.
How are you guys?
Doing great. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you. It's been a while.
This was had you worked on a ghost show before, Chris?
Yeah, but not to this capacity. You know what I mean? Like Hans Holzer, all of his case files, like everything was just like real legit. We're digging into histories. We were like looking at files that actually happened as opposed to like going to somewhere that someone said was haunted, you know, and Hans Holzer, as you guys know, was like one of the pioneers of paranormal investigation in this country, in the world. So this was a very different kind of paranormal show for me to work on.
Now, you got the chance to work very closely with the current homeowners, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to talk about those people because they were so awesome to work with. But as I touched on in the opening, I told the story as it has been told for centuries. Right. At the beginning of the show. Now we're going to take a deeper dive and look into this. If you have not yet seen this case, spoiler alert. But let's start to dissect this. And first of all, I'm curious, Chris, when you're going back to stories that far back, was it hard to uncover people that had experiences, people that knew the history and were willing to step forward and talk?
Absolutely. It was this case was particularly hard because the legend goes so far back, you know, and like finding the people and the families that were involved was particularly hard. But the fun part about this was actually finding a relative of Oceanborn Mary. So like, as hard as it was to navigate this case and look for people or the families that were involved, because again, you know, Hans Holzer was doing these things way before I think any of us on the screen was born. To find people that were directly involved with the case was difficult. But as
talk you- about, right. Talk about small world and weird coincidence. And as yeah. Dr. Holzer said, there are no coincidence. You're referring to the woman that, and, oh my gosh, her name just jumped out of my head. Do you remember her name?
Siri.
Yes. Siri. She yep. turned out to be a teacher for our executive producer and the owner of Painless Productions. And that's he's like, right. Wait a minute, who are you talking to? And she remembered Jim. Jim remembered her. That's a weird tie to come in 20, 30 years later for him.
I honestly think this was one of those cases where we weren't fighting to find the truth. Like, the truth was coming at us because a lot of the things that we were trying to set up, you know, just getting the initial files on this case, you know, Gabe, going over everything with Gabe, like, things weren't making sense. And I remember us kind of looking at each other and being like, you know, I don't think Hans was done with this. I don't think he was satisfied with the evidence that he found in that house. I don't think he believed anybody that he had been talking to. I don't think that anything that was said to him was accurate. And so working on this case, as you guys know, there were a lot of twists and turns.
And folks, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. So come up close to the monitor because I can't tell everybody, just you watching and listening. Come a little closer. Come on, get a little closer. I've had my shots. It's safe. We're on your computer. Sometimes in the paranormal, people lie. It's hard to believe. I know.
No way.
There are fibbers among us that have an ulterior motive and looking to make a name for themselves using the paranormal. We talked about that in the Franklin Castle episode from season 2, Tell Me No More Lies. And then this story was really a Rubik's Cube that was put together by Jigsaw from the Saw movies, right? I mean, there were so many weird twists and turns.
I mean, we were all over New England with this case, Dave. As you remember, like, right. from, you know,
New Hampshire to New Boston, Hampshire, yeah,
Boston to Rhode Island,
right?
And then out to remember we went out to Michigan,
yeah, to meet with Siri. Yeah, it was crazy. We were all over the place, and okay, let's talk about that. I don't remember if they mentioned this in the episode, but Siri, when we had first found her and made this connection, she was going to come to us and bring the jewelry and the pieces that the family has passed down. And I think the first time, wasn't there like a horrible storm or something that blew through?
There were a lot of moving parts. And I remember all of us talking about it because the way the case and the story ended up shifting, we ended up finding the actual Oceanborn Mary house because originally she was coming to Henniker, New Hampshire, to the place that everyone thought was the house that Oceanborn Mary lived in. And throughout that case, we figured out that a lot of that was false, right?
Shenanigans, yeah.
And I think that, you know, I don't know if it was Oceanborn Mary herself or, you know, anybody paranormal involved with the case was guiding us in a different direction.
Right, but here you've got this woman trying to get to us, and she was stopped 2 or 3 times with, I think, broken down car, bad weather, and then her husband, I think, got sick for a short time. Mm-hmm. So we ended up going to see Siri and get the items and then go back to visit her to show the reveal. Yep. But as you said, it was a crazy story with, you know, all this belief. And, you know, I know we were set to go out there. Shane and I were psyched to see this house with the mantle where the pirate is supposedly buried underneath. And I remember as we got closer and closer and we get there, there was an artist that owned the house and they're like, you know what? We really don't want to do this because in kind of looking into the history, I think you guys are barking up the wrong tree.
Right.
And we're like, well, no, we're not. We've got the story. Look, it's right here in Hans Holzer's book and in every magazine and newspaper article. And she's like, I think you need to do a little bit more digging.
Right. And it wasn't his books, But right. listening to the recordings and listening mm-hmm. and looking at his files, we saw that he was not 100% convinced of what was happening in that house.
Right. So there was the Oceanborn Mary House that we spoke about, where Gussie Roy later would charge people to dig up the yard and do all of this. Turns out that was a house connected to Oceanborn Mary. It was the house of her son, I want to say William. Mm-hmm. And William owned the house. She may have visited once or twice, but she never lived in the famed Oceanborn Mary House. So this story was propagated and built up by Gussie Roy and his mother. Now, his mother, he would dress her up in this white nightie, and when he would be talking outside the house of ghosts, he'd have her drift past the windows upstairs as people were, and they'd be like, there's somebody up there. And he's like, no, it's impossible. The house is empty. And then he would have, dudes, I understand we all got to make a living. COVID hit a lot of us hard, right? But I'm not going to send my mom out walking the yard in a white nightgown to try to stir up ghost business.
I mean, people have done a lot for less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And this was the 1900s. He's charging 50 cents for like an hour to go dig up his yard for an hour. And he'd also rent you the shovel. So you'd have to pay him to go dig, and you'd have to pay for the shovel. And then whatever you found, you were supposed to split, which was a good deal for old Gussie Roy, because as soon as they'd leave, he'd fill that hole in, pat it back down, and take the next sucker's money.
Yep.
So it turns out, though, Mary did live in town in Henniker. She lived in another home with her other son, and that she had moved in with him after her husband had passed away.
Correct.
So, and that was not Black Bart the pirate, just so we're all clear. But that house, if I remember, Chris, didn't that house burn to the ground at one point?
That house burned to the ground. Yes.
So here we are about to film this episode. And I remember you guys are coming to us and you're like, so the Oceanborn Mary House, she never lived in. The house she did live in
is gone,
burned to the ground.
Right.
And we're like, what? And so we're like, well, we're here. Let's just tell the story that we have. And there's still weird twists and turns. Maybe we can uncover something. We sat down and started talking to different historians. And then they dropped the bomb on us. Well, you know, that isn't Oceanborn Mary's house. And the one that burned down, the one she lived in her twilight years, is no longer around. But her childhood home that was right here in town was torn down as well.
It was a little further north.
Right. Yeah. But they had torn it down. And I remember her kind of leaving me with that. And then she goes, but then they rebuilt it board by board, brick by brick in a new location. And she wouldn't tell us directly where it was, but that's where a lot of the Mickey Mouse and goes.
Those are great days, Dave. Great days.
I remember
like, you know, getting that bomb dropped on us, and we're just like, we got to find this house, because she let us know it was relocated. It's not right. that she just was taken apart and thrown somewhere. No, the house was literally lifted, mm-hmm. relocated. And I remember, you know, all of us in a panic, like late nights, like trying to find this house.
And now we cannot say where it specifically is. We're protective because the family that owns it is very protective. So I know many of you are wondering, well, though, how do you know that this was truly the house? Well, this is inside the house. This house, built before 1730 at Londonderry, New Hampshire, moved and re-erected by G. Holden Green of Beacon Street, Boston, Massachusetts. That is the sign that actually hangs inside the Oceanborn Mary House. They have the provenance.
Right.
And the owner, Anne, you don't want to mess with her, because she is a historian. She knows her stuff.
And,
a knighted historian.
Yeah.
It's amazing. She was so great, both her and her husband. But we dig through. And thank God for you and Gabe and the people behind the scenes to actually get the people to open up to us, to tell us, you know, here's the right direction you want to look in. But, you know, the family wants to be left alone. Now, Chris, you and Gabe had to reach out to the owners. What was that first call like to them?
You know, it's funny. We were on a call. And I reached out to them, and I was just like, are you aware? I was, you know, I always take the initial before I let Dave come in and do his, Gabe come in and do his thing. I was like, are you aware of the house that you live in? And they're like, Oh, you mean Mary Wallace's house? Yes, they were 100% aware of who previously occupied this house and what it meant. They actually call it the Seaborne Mary House,
right,
opposed to the Oceanborne Mary House. But yeah, they were very aware of the history of the house, but kept it quiet and just kind of, you know, it wasn't the big fanfare that the actual or the Oceanborne Mary House in New Hampshire had. This was kind of kept on the hush hush, and we're going to do our part to keep that on the hush hush. But yeah, they were very aware of where they were living.
And this woman has got an insanely interesting pedigree. I talked to her. She's like, oh yeah, I'm a historian that's worked a lot on Ben Franklin's history and stories. I'm like, hey, you know, I've always wondered. I heard in England that in his house in England, they actually uncovered body parts underneath his house of, like, they think probably upwards of 40 to 50 cadavers. And she goes, oh yeah, I'm the one that found those.
Yep.
And I'm like, what? And that was so cool because she knows her stuff and explains, just so people don't wig out and think Ben Franklin was a serial killer. He had a house, but he also leased part of the house to a doctor during his stays. And when he'd be over in America, the doctor would be there. The doctor would work on cadavers. And back in the day, you would pay people to rob graves and bring you the cadavers. He would test and splice and cut and then dispose of them under the house.
And take whatever jewelry they had left.
Yes. And you got to love, right? Ben Franklin, he's got to come back home. I mean, we've all had that person that's come to our house and has left a little bit of a mess and you have to go in and clean, but never the smell of rotting, decaying bodies. That to me is a roommate maybe you need to get rid of at some point.
Whole new level.
Yeah. So she was great. And they were so into this, which was cool when we find them. But we're talking to the historians, and you could see historians, they don't usually like the paranormal aspect, but they were kind of open to the concept, and they liked the legend, I think, more than they liked.
We were very good at letting them know. And, you know, Dave, what you do speaks for itself. You know, like, you are an investigator. You were not a ghost hunter. And I feel like, you know, with that being said, there's a history digging that you're doing. You know, they love that stuff. We don't want to just go and, like, pretend there's some sort of spooks. We are uncovering a mystery. You guys literally uncovered a mystery. And I think that they loved that because there was parts of the Oceanborne Mary story that they didn't know either that we were bringing to them. So with you guys sitting down, you guys were literally bringing them evidence and stories and facts that they didn't know that made sense to them. And then they gave us more facts that made sense to us.
Right, it was very Hannibal Lecter quid pro quo as I sat down in front of her. I had the little envelope of information. I'll let you know, but tell me about the lambs, Clarice, right? And she gave us the information. It was so cool to see the layout and the understanding of this story, but the fact that they wanted to get it right. And I think, Chris, I firmly believe what a lot of these historians loved about working with us is we could have taken the easy way and just talked about the ghost of the Oceanborne Mary House and just accepted it at face value. But I think in every episode that we filmed, they really liked the fact that we didn't stop with what was known, but we wanted to go
dig deeper.
Deeper. Yeah. And try to get it understood and dig for that full story. Would you, and I know you did this work for us on many of the episodes. Did you run into many people who would be less than happy to have us come in? I mean, were there a lot of times?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in this particular case, I mean, you know, there was a family that lived in the Oceanborne Mary House in Henniker that were anxious to talk to us in 1 minute and then did not want to talk to us after that, you know?
Right.
I do think that a lot of that was still Oceanborne Mary steering us away from the false narratives. You know, looking back at it, I feel like we were being guided on this case more than being pushed away because, you know, we've worked on many cases together and there were some cases where, like, clearly whatever force was happening was pushing us away. This was not one of them. I feel like Mary was trying to get her story out there. But yeah, there was a few families. You know, the homeowner of the Oceanborne Mary House in Henniker, New Hampshire, like, you know, they wanted to kind of go on with their lives and didn't, you know, didn't really want to partake.
They were all against us tearing up their mantle place looking for a dead pirate. What?
And not that we were going to do that. But I think one of the biggest breakthroughs we had, too, was when we were allowed to take Cindy to her burial site.
Yes. Now, that's weird, right? Getting permission, because you kind of, you know, a lot of these cemeteries, they're like, yeah, everybody from that family's dead, but there are new fresh graves around, and families don't want you capturing that. But we did go. Now, here's an interesting behind the scenes story. This was, I think 4 episodes into filming or so for season 1. It was cold. I mean, like, stupid cold. And it was one of the only times we had snow on the ground. And of course, a lot of it had gone away, but the snow was right in front of Mary's grave. So as we stood there for an hour and a half to film that scene where Cindy's trying to connect with the spirits, we were freezing. And I do have a couple of pictures we'll show real quickly. Here is Mary Wallace's grave.
Yep, there it is.
Memory of the widow Mary Wallace. And that's it. We were right there at Oceanborn Mary's grave.
We were.
I'm going to give you an idea of how cold it was. I would have to, I did not have a hat or earmuffs. So I would have
to the show with your sexy bald head.
Yes. So I took my gloves off during breaks and I put my hands in my pockets, but I still had a use for my gloves.
Hey. Yes.
I look like Bullwinkle. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a ghost out of my head. But I've got my gloves over my ears. And that's our showrunner, Rob Saffy, in the background of that picture. But it was, was it cold.
He looked miserable, too.
Right.
In that picture, he looks miserable because it was cold.
Yeah. So we had just left New York.
Yeah.
And even just being in New York was a little bit warmer than it was there. So we go about 3 hours north of Rye, New York City. And it was cold. Snow on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we had to sit there. And poor Cindy, folks, you got to understand, we brought her and dropped her into a cemetery. She has no clue why we're there. She gets led around and we end up in front of Mary's grave. She fills the pole, but there are spirits from other graves pulling and trying to talk to her. She was getting very agitated and it was cold. We were all getting irritated by being out there so long in the cold. And this was one of those instances where I feel really bad for Cindy because she's hitting on things that I don't know yet. I have no clue. And I'm just mentally taking notes. And I stood there holding I think I had like the bag with the jewelry and the plates in it.
And she didn't know you had it yet.
No. And she was getting agitated by whatever I had in my hands. Mm-hmm. It was really strange to watch her get so pissed. And it was so cold when we finally took a break. They're like, go sit in the car, warm up for a little bit. I couldn't open my hands.
Yeah.
So I handed you guys the plates and I'm like, Shane, blow on my hands, do something. So we go sit in the car and Cindy was inconsolable. She was so angry. And Shane and I are looking in the car and like any little thing we said, she'd get mad about. And we started to realize something's pissing her off. This spirit, energy.
She knew. Yeah. She knew we were not in the right spot. She felt it.
Right.
She knew it. And I think Mary was telling her that. And it was really agitating her. I do remember that 100%.
And you do have to know, folks, I mean, when we're talking about this case, this girl, Mary, her life was never her own. From the moment that pirate boarded her ship and left.
Pirate baby. She was pirate baby.
She lost the rights to her own story. People talked about her and they talked about the fact that this pirate would come back and visit and all these things that would happen and then ghost stories around her. And this poor woman, even in death, could not catch a break. It was really bizarre to see all this unfold. Listen, we do have to take a quick break. I do want to make a quick mention. Shane and I are going to be, and so is Tim Dennis from Darkness Radio, but Shane and I are going to be in Gettysburg next week. We arrive Wednesday. We're there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll be meeting you. Shane and I will be doing a talk together. I think Tim and I are going to do a talk together. We're going to have a great time, but if you want to get some more insight behind the stories of the Holzer Files, come on out to Gettysburg. You can get information at Phenom2020, Phenom2020.com. Yes, I know it's 2021, but this was originally booked for last year when the pandemic hit, so it got moved over. But Shane and I will be there. We've got a couple other cool events. Darknessevents.com is the place to go look, and you'll see all the locations that Shane, Cindy, and myself will be visiting throughout the year. And I think I've got one to two events every month until February of 2022. So there's plenty of opportunity to come on out and meet us. California, Nevada, Michigan, Gettysburg. Those are just some of the ones off the top of my head. So it's going to be a fun year. But go check out darknessevents.com for more information on upcoming events. And if you're near the Gettysburg area or have always wanted to go, this is a perfect time to do it. Go next week and get your tickets now. They're very reasonable for the entire weekend, and you'll have a great time with us. All right, stay tuned. We've got more coming your way. This is Darkness Radio presents Holzer's Ghosts, the ghost of Oceanborn Mary. Welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for joining us today on Darkness Radio, our special edition of Holzer's Ghosts, as we look at Season 1, Episode 7, Legends and Lies is the name of the episode, The Ghost of Oceanborn Mary. Our guests tonight, of course, from the Holzer Files, Shane Pittman, our tech, and our field segment producer, and one of the most important guys on set to make sure everything runs smoothly and we get everybody in that we need. Chris Cagle is with us. Good to see you again, Chris. Now let's dig in a little bit more into this story, because Shane, when we go to do that baseline investigation at the cemetery, it's so cold, but we're connecting. Do you remember the conversation you and I had? They keep us separate, folks, for those of you that don't know. So after we get done, Cindy's taken away in one car, Shane and I in another, so that we can talk and not influence her about the case or what she hit on. But do you remember how confused we were by the information she was giving us that night?
Yeah, because like you said before, we had all of the case file information and nothing was adding up. I mean, she was giving us a lot of things that we were like, what? Red, white, or red, black, and yellow flag? What are you talking about? And she was picking up on a bunch of stuff that we had no clue. We had no clue where she was going with it. It was nowhere to be seen in the case file at all. And yeah, me and you, I remember the conversation. We're like, where is this going? I mean, and at certain times we were like, how is this case going to progress? Is it going to progress? Because it was kind of like a standstill almost with some of the information we were getting.
Well, right. And then you're standing there and you don't want to be cynical or skeptical. But again, you're getting a medium she's the only one hearing things and getting this message. And we're in the middle of a cemetery. So is she really getting the messages from Oceanborn Mary from that story? Or is she getting messages from other spirits? So you and I are trying to sort through that to figure out where we're going to go. And that was frustrating. Chris, I remember having a group meeting with producers and directors. And Shane and I are like, I don't know, man. You know, we don't have a place to investigate. We don't. We've got stories coming up from Cindy that don't make any sense. And for those of you that don't remember, Cindy kept talking about seeing a flag. It was like a yellow flag with an arm and a sword, and then there was red, like blood.
Specifically, yeah.
And we literally had in our folder the images of Black Bart's pirate flags, and they were black and white, right? They were like the Jolly Roger. They were very basic and there was nothing color. But then as we keep digging and ask around, it turns out one of his sailors aboard his ship, one of the privateers, had created a special flag for when they would board. So they would have their normal flag flying, and then when you knew the ship was about to hit the storm, when up the old flagpole went the red, yellow, and black flag that had the arm with the sword showing you were coming aboard, and there was, a red, like, hourglass telling you your time was limited.
Yeah.
And it turns out that this guy, Cindy has no freaking way to know this. She looks, we find this. There's this artist. We're like, well, that's not the pirate. And then it turns out, no, it's not, but it's one of the pirates that worked under Black Bart. And that guy was like Tony Soprano, right? We think pirates, yeah. We think Captain Jack Sparrow with the Black Pearl, one ship and we're onwards.
But there's different ranks underneath them, just like, right. Like you said, in the mob, there's different ranks. but you knew what those flags meant when they were being flown, whether.
And he had like a fleet. He had like three pirate ships going to hit all the angles. So he was cleaning up out there doing this work.
Absolutely. So, so just to like to remind your viewers, like once we figured out that we had to go south,
right,
to New England town, you know, once Sydney confirmed it, the historians confirmed it, we go south to where the house is now located. But we speak to a person who is very, who understands pirates, right? And they kind of give us the lowdown on pirate flags and the whole nine when it comes to that.
Right. And yeah, to get that information and history and then uncover that, boom, we've really got it. We've got right. The flag. She's dead on. Those are the moments that Shane and I would just sit back and scratch our heads and we'd be like, how the hell could she get this kind of information? Producers couldn't find it. Nobody could find it. Cindy clued in on it, knew what it was. This pirate expert and came on to chat with us about it. And I'm still disappointed nobody talked to us in pirate language at all, though, Chris. What kind of producer are you that not one person's like, are you ready, kids?
Well, it's like you said too, though, Dave, remember this was early on in our filming, so we were still getting the feel.
What was that?
Yeah.
Hey, Tucker,
oh, what's
how you
up,
doing?
Buddy? How's it what's going, up, man?
How are you?
Good to see you, buddy.
Doing
now, Tucker.
Good.
Tucker was our showrunner for season one for I think about more than half of our episodes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's good to see you, buddy. Good to see you.
Good to see you, man. It's been a long time.
You guys too. Awesome. Chris told me he was doing it. I had to stop in and say hi.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Congratulations. What are you working on? Tell people.
I mean, right now I have about three shows in production and we're doing a lot of commercial and, big brand work. So
nice. Do you have any memory while we've got you? Because I know you were our showrunner and director on this one. Real quick. Do you have any memory from the Oceanborn Mary house and any of the weirdness?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote the first season, 10 weeks before anybody came on, so I really remember when Chris took it over, the idea of thinking we knew the story going into it and it just kind of evolving into what it became was amazing. And it was like a trek for every twist and turn that we went around the corner. It was something new. And where we ended up, we can't say the location, right? We can't say the location, but yeah. But I remember where we ended up in the history in that place. You could feel it walking in. I mean, there was a floorboards that was built in the 1600s where this, this wide, and you can't find boards that wide. There's no old growth forest anymore. So
right.
You knew the place was legit just walking in from a historical standpoint, never mind the shroud of the story behind it. So I do remember it, and I do remember it was probably one of the best, most story-driven holes. I love the fact that Holes Hanser went to the wrong house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. That was a really cool thing, and that was the purpose, I think, of the Holzer files, of reopening his files and reinvestigating to find closure and it wasn't a mistake that he made. It was what he was told.
Right.
And the technology he had at that point. Yeah, and he had a hunch about it, right? And I think, I don't know if it was this case, but he said something about charlatans. Maybe it was a different case, it was this one, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so, and we all know who he's referring to. However, but he had a hunch about it the whole time, and we were able to carry out kind of not close the case, but just reinvigorate the case and add more layers to it.
No, but I think we did close it for like him, his legacy, his family, because he was misled.
Right.
Yeah.
He was able to finish it out. And we did.
Yeah. And we closed it for Mary too, telling her story in the way that she wanted it told.
And we obviously closed it for Anne and her husband when we burned the place to the ground before we left town. So I said they didn't want to be bothered again. I made sure of it.
Filet mignon.
Well, Tucker, it was great seeing you. Thanks for popping in, man.
Good seeing you, man.
Yeah, great seeing you guys too. We'll see you.
Sorry. All right, take care.
I'm gonna say hi.
That's awesome. That's look at that. Chris Cagle, the man in power, just no. Oh, by the way, I have Hans Holzer here too, Dave. Let me bring him in.
No, that's awesome, man. We haven't seen Tucker in a long time.
Before we get going, like Tucker, like he's the man. Like again, this show was what it was because of his brainchild. So we thank him 100%.
It was very cool, and yeah, just the people behind this you could tell there was a lot of love.
A lot of love.
That was put into this so that you could feel it. And I think that's why we do stand out from any of the other shows that that are out there. Hey, next week, folks, we're going to take a look at Grave Secrets, the haunting of the Howard Dickinson House, or as I like to call it, the Michael Myers episode of Shane Pittman. Wait,
who are you guys getting for that show?
I think you'll have to tune in and find out, Chris Cagle. wasn't that the Howard Dickinson House?
One of my episodes, too.
Yes, wasn't that the episode, Shane, where you like were so pissed off in the basement?
Oh my God!
Yeah,
Dave, he literally wanted to kill you.
I know.
I saw his face change.
It was probably the most terrifying experience. I hope to God that never happens to me again.
Well, tune in next week. We'll talk about that one then, folks.
What a story that was. Yeah, guys, tune in next week. I won't be on it. But I guarantee you definitely want to hear these two's takes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's good. That scene, I remember watching that scene, and I'll cover it real quick. When Shane's in the basement, get more and more agitated, and all of a sudden he just stops and walks up and looks into the camera, and you just see he's gone. And then they cut to me talking. I'm like, hey, what's your name? Who's your daddy? And then all of a sudden the door comes shutting, and he's gone.
Yeah, we had to stop production for a minute to let Shane like collect himself.
Yeah, he looked like he was standing in that doorway behind me, like he was about to kill me.
Yeah,
that was freaky.
He admitted it to you. That was the funny thing. I'm literally on my mic and I can hear him. And
yeah,
he's like, I don't know what it is. He's like, I just want to punch Dave in the face right now. And we're like, oh no.
And a little behind the scenes, real quick. I do remember this very vaguely. Is his stomach, he must have been a little bit hungry and his stomach was making noises, and I was like, God, even his stomach growling is pissing me off. Like I remember it, just everything was irritating. I
mean, those last few episodes that we shot definitely took a toll on him. I do remember that.
And
going to Barnstable, and I remember that taking a toll on you too.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to. You guys can put those episodes out there when you're ready.
After tonight, we only have 3 more weeks.
Yeah.
After tonight, only 3 more episodes to discuss. But I do want to tell people that next week we will not have a Holzer's Ghost because we will be in Gettysburg and we won't be able to do the show because we're going to be there performing and hanging out. The following week, we're going to do a special edition of Holzer's Ghosts, a case that did not make it on the show. We're going to talk about the ghost of Bishop Pike. We're going to talk about the psychic world and ghost of Bishop Pike. Chris Cagle. Oh, I know.
Another one of my episodes that were like, was crazy.
And maybe we can talk to your pick your brain, or even if you're available to pop on for a few minutes. I think it's like June.
You let me know. Yeah, you let me know.
I've got
lots of things.
Mark Anthony's going to be on with me to talk about the case. He's studied it. He knows the ins and outs of Bishop Pike's story, which is weird, a very weird story. Very so we're going to talk about that.
Again, maybe if you want to call me so we can talk.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's get back. We're talking
Oceanborn Mary.
Yeah, we're talking tonight about Oceanborn Mary. You can see the passion, folks, in what we do with these series. We love them, and each story, each one. That's why when people tell me what's your favorite, Oceanborn Mary is one of my favorites. Whaley is one of my favorites in season one, but it's hard to pick specifics because each episode brought something unique with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, going back to this episode, we get in, we talk to everybody, the historians, everybody wants us to find the truth. And what was really powerful to me is the fact that this house had been relatively quiet. They could sense an energy. Anne and her husband would talk about, they could sense that they weren't alone, but there was never any mischievous nonsense until they gave you permission to allow us into the home. And then the 3 days leading up to it,
mayhem.
Yeah, they came in. All the light bulbs are out of their sockets on the floor.
They're flying into their window panes.
Now, let's talk about that.
They stopped working.
Let's talk about that because that's a cool aspect of the show that they very briefly touch on, but they don't tie it to anything. So the homeowner's talking to us about, it was really strange. As I'm here, this red cardinal keeps throwing itself into the window, and it's hitting hard. She goes, then it goes around to the other side and starts hitting the window. And it hits me. I'm like, a red cardinal? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you playing a game here with me? No, why? Black Bart the pirate was a fancy dancy pirate, because when he went aboard other ships to plunder, he changed into an outfit that was all red. And then he had that big like pimp hat on with a big red feather coming off the back. And so like a big red plume, like a cardinal. So he had been cut out of her story for well over 100 years. And now that we were messing with things, spirit activity starts mounting, and this bird, this brightly lit bird, wants in the house. That's a weird point, especially when you know that Native American and indigenous people believe in the spirits, and the birds are a very powerful sign. And there's just too much. We could not, you know, have even Hollywood couldn't have made it up. It was so cool to see all that stuff come together.
Yeah, no, it really was. I was just like, you know, for them to come home, you know, because they only live there half the year, you know,
right.
They have a house down south. They were like, they had never really experienced anything quite like it. They knew there was an energy there, but it was never menacing to them. So they just kind of let it go. But to have kind of menacing things start happening for them, it was weird. And I feel like it was because of our presence there, you know?
Right. It is. It's weird to know that the spirits are so aware that they're starting to, you know, or spirit maybe in this case. But we head on out to this house, kind of do just like a real quick baseline to get a feel and a vibe for this house. And it's definitely got some energy. But then we decide for the main investigation. Now, I'll tell you, Chris, this is the one thing I know viewers wish we had as much as we wish we had. And maybe going forward, if we get more seasons, I want to try to get a head camera, because there are things that take place. Like when we were in there and we were talking and trying to get our bearings, what's the monitor we had that kept beeping like crazy? Melmeter.
The Melmeter.
Right?
Yeah.
Melmeter's going crazy, drawing us into rooms. Then we'd hear crashes in another room. We go out and find heavy doors wide open that were closed seconds ago. Light bulbs out of the sockets.
Yeah.
Nuts, right? So as we're standing there talking and trying to gather our wits, something walks past the window outside.
I do remember that.
And first of all, it pisses me off because we're not supposed to have anybody there. It's us. The cameraman, the sound guy, that's it. Everybody else is offset. They're not allowed to be there because we don't want that. And at first I'm thinking, all right, I'm gonna, you know, I saw somebody. Okay, we'll go on. And we kept talking. And all of a sudden the person walks the other way and starts heading out into the yard. And I go, somebody just walked past the window, and I'm looking. I couldn't see him. I actually left the house. They don't show this in the episode because, again, it goes nowhere. But that rattled me. I went out. I saw a full dark figure pass just like this in front of the window.
For those of you who don't know, the show's an hour. We shoot for hours and hours and hours. So, yeah, a lot happens in those hours that we're investigating.
So I go booking out there. There's no spirit. There's no person. There's nothing out in that yard. That was weird, and it was unsettling. I didn't want to go back in the house, to be honest with you, because it was so weird. But then talking about weird, Shane, Cindy is standing there. She's a medium, a psychic medium who has this ability. And we start hearing footsteps, audible footsteps. The camera guys hear it. The sound guys hear it. You and I hear it. Cindy's not hearing it.
Yeah. And not just footsteps. We were hearing a lot of chatter, like whispering. And we were like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And we were going back and forth. And finally, Cindy was like, guys, calm down. You know, and we were like, we understand, but it's like sensory overload. Like, we don't know how to handle this situation because it was so intense and we didn't know how to handle it. And she had to actually calm us down in that moment. I remember that vividly.
Go ahead, like, Chris.
Well, because I feel like this was one of the first cases, but it happened a few times where, like, it's almost like some of the ghosts of the paranormal were like kind of hip to the game, and they were blocking Cindy from hearing.
Yeah, right.
You guys were now hearing. It was almost like the adverse. Like, you guys were the sensitives to some of the things that she should have been sensitive to, and she was being blocked.
Right, and right. That amped us up. I mean, I remember. I was so rattled in that episode because Shane and I could feel this breeze moving around the three of us. And our heads are pivoting like this as we're standing there. And we're like, Cindy, how are you not hearing this? She's like, guys, I don't hear anything. And you could see her agitation again. I think she thought we were screwing with her at first. And we're like, No, we caught some sounds on the EVP's recorders. But that was such a powerful moment. And then to realize, I think we pissed the ghost off because we'd brought the jewelry. We brought the things from her past back as what we call a trigger object.
Right.
And
I thought we were doing something good, and I don't think we did.
No. And the spirits were not happy that we had returned to kind of stir this cauldron again. And I understand why. Again, we talked about the fact this poor girl, her whole life, she lived to be like 90, right? Wasn't it like 91? She lived her whole life having people
crazy for the time period that she lived in.
Right.
Wrong. Yeah.
She, you know, it was just so strange to see her story and to know that she had no control over her own story and narrative. Everybody else told these stories about her.
She became the ultimate folklore, but right. lived through her folklore alive. You know, a lot of folklores you hear about people get built upon while you're dead. Hers was literally being built as she was still a living, breathing person.
Yeah.
And then in her death to just get escalated, you know?
Right. Yeah. And now there was some other things too, right? Not only were the light bulbs falling out, but she had trouble getting in the door at one point. And then didn't she have like a brand new oven that just refused? It was like
refuses or not. They never had any issue with it until we showed up.
Yeah. So things were shutting down and then everything went back to normal when we left. But we got to talk about what an amazing couple these people were. And I'm so bad with names. Anne, I remember Anne and her husband.
Yep. And her husband.
Her husband wanted nothing to do with being on screen, but he was there watching everything. And we all need this kind of love in our life. There they are in the house. They wanted to pose for a picture and hang out and get to talk.
Amazing.
Her husband would come over and as she would get done filming a scene, he'd come over and he goes, "That's my Annie. Isn't she great, fellas?" And he'd give her a big hug and a kiss. And he'd be like, "Gosh, that was swell, honey. You sure did know that story backwards and forwards." It was so funny to see the energy. And there was even times she was like, right, she got her older eyes because he was like this hyperkinetic little puppy.
He was more into it than she was. She definitely had the experiences. And
yes,
very, very happy she was willing to talk about it on camera. So.
Yeah, but they were a great couple. You know, to uncover stories where the spirits are telling us, you know, this story is filled with lies. We get that EVP, you know, there's something you want us to tell the family about these items. It's a lie. This whole false narrative. Yeah.
She said that in your EVP.
I
still remember lies.
And, you know, that's kind of heartbreaking. Now, Shane, I mean, to have gone through that rush of you and I kind of being the sensitives in that moment, and then we capture EVP, and you could hear the torment in this voice when she just is like, "I just want the lies to stop. I just want it to all go away." How did that impact you?
Yeah, well, whenever I was listening to it, it's heartbreaking, like you said. I mean, like Chris was talking about, she lived her whole life under all of that folklore and those lies. And for us to be able to bring truth to the table, I mean, I think it was rewarding, but at the same time, it was heartbreaking because you could hear that pain.
And how about this? Here was another really weird instance. Do you remember the fog rolling in?
Yes, I was actually going to say that. It was,
that was nuts.
It was creepy, but it was also comforting in the same way. You remember getting, it was like almost a comforting feeling, even though it looked eerie. You know, it was the middle of January, I think, you know, but it was like a weird, warm fog that just kind of rolled in and blanketed this whole ocean town.
Right. Right? And it was thick, and it was just, and when it started, right, I mean, it's still bright and sunny out now, all of a sudden, It just starts getting gray and you just see these fog rolls coming in and you're like, what the hell? It made you feel cut off from everything. And look, it's like every good horror movie, right? You got that weird smoke and fog and you know the shit's about to hit the fan.
Right.
I was, you know, I wouldn't say I was afraid. I was definitely unnerved in that episode. And I think more so not because of the activity, but the fact that Shane and I were getting bombarded with that energy. Shane, did you have any residual issues with that? I know I felt so spent after that first night. I think I slept most of the entire day the next day.
Yeah. It was definitely draining because the whole time it was high intensity level the entire time. So the entire investigation, we're hearing whispering. We don't know which way to go. Like, we're hearing noises in other rooms. We go there, then we hear noises where we just left. And it was like that the entire night, the entire investigation.
We were essentially working off of nothing. Remember,
right?
We were the first ones to actually investigate the real Oceanborn Mary house, to be in that particular house that she actually lived in. You guys were the first ones to actually ever investigate it. So, like, there was a lot that you guys unpacked. You know,
we are the first and only to ever get a chance to investigate. They said they wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't do it again.
So it was all of the paranormal stuff that was going on, but it was also mentally draining too, because we were getting all of this information coming at us at once and trying to process that and fit all the puzzle pieces together. I mean, it was it took a while to get over that one for sure.
Now, I'm going to open it up to folks. If you have questions for our producer, Chris Cagle, for this episode, or Shane, myself, feel free to pop up with a question regarding the Oceanborn Mary episode. If we haven't done it yet, we will discuss this. I'm just looking to see if there was any that popped in here. Holly McNally seems to have a question. Dave and Shane, do you guys ever actually get scared or just nervous? One of us gets nervous. One of us gets scared. I'll let you guys decide by watching.
I've definitely seen Shane get scared, but you know, they came a point where it was just like Shane would bring the most out when we stuck him in the smallest, darkest reaches of the home, whether it was the basement, the attic, a closet, and we got a lot of activity. So I've definitely seen Shane get scared. I've seen Dave get scared too.
I've gotten scared as hell. I'll just tell you that. Yeah, on more than one occasion.
The most terrifying moments for me is when Shane would drive in a state that he didn't know. Those would be the most terrifying moments for me.
With roundabouts.
Yes.
If there were roundabouts.
Oh, Chris, you missed it.
Game over.
Here's Shane. Man, what the hell? Why got all these roundabouts? Why can't we just have a straight street? This drives me crazy. And he'd get all so pissed off. And then the poor guy, for one of those films, he decides he's going to drive into Boston for the day. He gets like 2 miles out of Boston. He's like, screw this. The traffic's tough. And he turns around and drives 90 minutes back the other way.
I drove to Boston because I was going to catch a movie because I was like, I've got free time.
Yeah.
And there were so many cuss words that came out of my mouth because these people, it was stop and go, stop and go, stop and go. I was like, screw this. So yeah, I drove almost 2 hours back to the hotel and said, just forget it.
Cindy Brown says a huge thank you to Dave, Shane, and Cindy for bringing us this amazing paranormal show. Well, thank you to people like Chris Cagle and Justin Tucker and Rob Safi, Jim from Painless, the great crew behind us, because they help make the magic happen. They take all these little bits of gold and sew them together into really neat stories so that we've got something to be proud of. Sandy Wolf says, I know this has nothing to do with the subject, but Dave, have you ever experienced apportations like an item or a coin materializing? Yes. And we're going to talk about that in a few weeks when we visited the Ayers Allen house, which I believe was our second episode we shot together. And a spoon apported, but it sounded like a thundering boom. And then we go out there and all it is, you hear this boom and the whole side of the house shakes. And we go out there and there's this little spoon that hit the ground. I'm like, man, that's some powerful apportation that took place. But we'll talk about that in the episode when we get back to it. Let me see here. We've got a couple others. And some of them are scrolling by so quick. If I missed you, just re-ask the question if I didn't get to you. Here we go. Dave, how do you reconcile what you know now with Lorraine Warren's story the first time she appeared on Darkness Radio? With what case, Maria? I'm not sure. I don't think the Warrens had... Well, did they... Do you remember if the Warrens had a tie to this case, Chris?
They had been to Oceanborn Mary's house in they had been to the supposed Oceanborn Mary house in Henniker.
Okay.
They're kind of the reason why it was a roadside attraction, but
gotcha.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, Maria, if it was one of my first times I've visited with Lorraine, that was 15 years ago. And I really don't remember many of the ghost stories. I was just so enamored with chatting with her, and we went more actually into her love story with her and Ed than we did much of the paranormal. But I don't remember her mentioning the Oceanborne Mary House. But it's interesting, you know, people get things wrong, and I don't blame Ed and Lorraine. Lorraine still picked up on energy there. She picked up on things.
Oh,
and
she just energy there.
Yeah, she just misinterpreted. I mean, that house in Henniker, New Hampshire is very old and has a storied history to it. It just isn't the history that people attribute to it. So let me see what else is going. Gene says, my favorite was the one of the first shows with Shane in the basement. That limits it down to about 3/4 of all of our episodes.
Poor Shane. Hashtag poor Shane. I love it.
Oh, stop. Poor Shane. Shane, you would have loved it last week. So when we were out at Mansfield Reformatory, and I'll get this on here. I was out at Mansfield Reformatory this last weekend doing an event, and I had this woman come up, and she was so excited. She loves the Holzer Files. She comes up, she gives me a big hug. She's like, "You're my favorite, John." And I knew that you'd enjoy that. And then she came to my talk and apologized for calling me John. She knew my name was Dave. But it was just so funny. And then I'm like, yeah, we're doing this. And you know, it's tough because sometimes I'm looking for sympathy, right? I'm trying to, how about the hashtag poor Dave? I go, I had to wear, what did I wear in every episode? And everybody just gives me this blank stare. And the one guy goes, well, you always wore like that beanie hat, right? I'm like, I look every day, I go, did you fuckers even watch this show? Did anybody watch this show?
I was going to say leather jacket.
Yes, I wore a leather jacket in every episode. I was boiling, but it was just so funny that they had like, they're all there because they love the Holzer Files. Good old John, the lead investigator, and the fact that I wore a beanie during the investigation. Shane, have that, you...
That's when you know you've made your mark.
Yeah, I don't know what the mark is. Grow Your Life says, Shane, have you ever considered learning mediumship techniques so you can manage your sensitivity?
Oh, I didn't until Cindy said that I should. So, because I, you know, I was just thinking, oh, I'm skittish and I'm scared. You know, and she was saying, hey, you know, you have some sensitivity to this stuff. You need to try to harness it a little bit more.
I think so, I remember that conversation happening for you.
Yep.
Because, like,
yep.
You were, there came a point where you were literally tapping into some stuff you weren't even aware of, you know? Even
movements and... Right, and I didn't know how to process it, and still don't a lot of ways. But yeah, I didn't even entertain that idea until she said something about it.
And Cindy has continually told me that I'm insensitive, so it makes sense.
Wow.
Does it affect the crew during the investigation? I don't know if, Susan Detman, if you mean like our camera guys and everything, but yes. We've, you know, our camera guys hear things running up behind them. The sound guys are affected because they'll hear things coming through their microphone or through their sound systems, and they don't know where it's coming from or what's happening. And a lot of times those guys, the sound guys, have got the shittiest job, right? They've got to be like cramped in the corner of a room or like in a closet not to bother us. And they're not the ones rapping or knocking, because we know where they are at all times, but they've got to be there to record our voices so they can hear us. But sometimes these poor guys are all alone in a little room while we're doing it, and they're hearing footsteps come up behind them. Mm-hmm. Did any of the locations freak you out from season one, Chris, being a producer and going in and having to kind of be the first boots on the ground to go into these houses and make sure everything was okay?
Yeah. yeah, I mean, I slept at Oceanborne Mary House with the Keers one night, and it was a little creepy. I was with you, even though I wasn't the lead producer, I was with you guys when we did the first episode at the Whaley House, and I remember having a very vivid dream about the place before I'd ever even gone there, so it creeped me out that I knew, like, where pictures were. And then Lambert Castle was definitely the one for me.
Yeah, we just talked about that last week. We had April and Barbara DeVied on.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it was a fun episode to talk about. Lori Torres, Dave asks, or she asks Dave, where would you like to investigate that you have not been yet? I would really like to investigate Kate Beckinsale's house. I don't know if it's haunted, but I'd really like to investigate it. Is that, I don't know. Where would I like to investigate?
Amazing cases in Europe, Dave. And I'm always hoping for the Holzer Files to extend and go to some of his prolific cases over there. So for you guys.
I, I would like the White House. That would be my one place above all. I'd love to get a chance to investigate the Lincoln bedroom.
I would be worried for Cindy or any medium to go in there, to be honest.
Really?
I would.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I guess so. There's probably a lot of
history there, a lot of dark stuff. So,
Shane, any place you'd like to go that we haven't been yet?
Well, it's not Holzer related, I don't believe, but the catacombs, Paris catacombs, I think I'd love to.
That's an amazing place. We saw shadows moving around down there while we did a tour 2 years ago.
There's tons of bodies there.
Yeah. Gina LG says, what's your favorite tool to use during an investigation? Anyone in particular? Shane is my favorite tool. I love sending them down to the basement or the attic, and I can pretty much
love the Mel meter.
Yeah. I'm pretty much sure I can avoid him, the bad stuff for a while at least. But I like my audio recorders. That's my main thing. What about you, Shane? What's your favorite tool?
I'd have to say digital recorder. I've caught some amazing EVPs from that simple piece of equipment. And, that will blow your mind whenever you hear voices that you know there's nobody else in the room but you and whoever else you're with. You know, me and you, Dave, hearing a woman's voice on a recorder, or whenever we were on locations and catching some things on your recorder.
Yeah.
That we knew nobody else was around. I mean, that's got to be one of my favorites.
Like the laugh when we first got the DR60?
Yep.
You want me to play that real quick?
Do it. Somebody in the comments said, new t-shirt, Shane's a tool. I don't think so, buddy.
You can buy them on Dave's website.
I don't think so.
So here's the deal. This was cool for season two, Chris. We got the long-awaited arrival of a Panasonic DR60, which is kind of the holy grail of recorders. And I got it, and it was sent to my hotel, and I broke it out of the package. I'd read all the information about it, all the cynics and what they believe made it happen. So I wanted to test it just to see, does it sound mechanical? Does it sound like radio frequency? What is it? And I record, and I stupidly erased the first recording, but I like said something, and it responded. And I called Shane. I'm like, get down to my room. And he came down to my room, and I played it for him. He's like, get out of here. Do it again. I want to watch. So I'm like, okay. So I start running an EVP, and let me see if I can turn up the volume on this. I'll play it twice. I apologize for the kind of Mickey Mouse way I'm doing this, but you hear me ask if it knows who I am or asks my name, and the response pretty much tells you how my entire life goes. Yeah, so I say, can you say my name? Say Dave, and it starts laughing at me. Like, bitch, who am I? Say my name. Listen, Beyonce, you're in the wrong place if that's what you want, right? So,
and then we caught afterwards it saying, hi, John.
Yeah. Shane, I also remember how emotional you got when we were in Barnstable and you heard the voice of that little girl.
There's no one here. Yeah, that's something that will stick with me forever.
I'll never forget that. And that's when I knew. I was just like, I know you're the tech guy, but I know that you have some mediumship qualities, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it was one of that was a defining moment for me to where I knew this is why I do what I do. No doubt about it. This is why is that moment. And it changed my life in a lot of ways, for sure.
Cherie Bridges says, Shane, would you say the Mel meter is one of the better pieces of equipment to use?
Yeah, I like the Mel meter a lot. You can, get temperature readings. It also has its own radiating electromagnetic field. So that antenna that you see, if something passes over it or close to it, it goes off and lets you know. I think it's a really good piece of equipment, especially if you're not in a particular room and you want to set it in there and walk somewhere else. So if something interferes with it, it's going to beep and let you know. You can run back in there and find out what's going on, and it gives you all the readings for it too. So yeah, I think it's pretty good equipment.
The only one problem I have with it is the beeping does get annoying, and that's got to be horrible for audio and editing, but yeah, it's so powerful when you see it going off. But when we're standing a foot away from each other and I'm like, what? Beep, 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 beep. Did it go off? Beep, 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 beep. What? right? Where you can't hear what's going on. That is kind of the annoyance of it. That's why you don't see it in every episode, because the directors are like, yeah, it's great when we get some activity on it, but then it's so loud. We can't, you know, so it's just a lot to work around. Cindy Brown asks, how long does it take to normally recover from an investigation? And I think it depends. It took me a couple days after getting knocked on my ass at Whaley to really kind of shake the funk I was in. And some of them I'm fine the next morning. Some of them, like this one, wore me and Shane out. There was so much chaotic energy going on around us. Like, this spirit wanted the truth told and was willing to scare us a little bit to get our attention. And so that's kind of the way it went for me. Oh, I think we lost Chris.
And just, you know, the investigation at Port Clyde, that gave you a lasting effect, right? So you had, you still have a scar from that case, right?
Right. Yeah, I did. My back is still showing the big wound. Just checking to see if he's popping back in. If we did, Chris Cagle, thank you so much for joining us tonight and being a part of the show. I know. Oh, there we go. I think he's coming back in now. Chris.
Sorry about that, guys.
The spirits are speaking. I thought maybe they knocked you offline.
Yeah. They're like, shut up. You've said too much.
we'll let you go in a few seconds. I know you've got more stuff to do. Let me see a couple other quick questions here. Veronica Gomez, now that the true story is out about Oceanborn Mary, has the activity at the locations changed in any way? You kept in touch with the family that owned it. Did they have any more?
No. Like, again, they never really had anything that was, you know, anything that was crazy for them. You know, they embraced Oceanborn Mary. They embraced her presence there. Us showing up there, I think, kind of stirred the pot, but it was also important because I think at the end we were able to finish her story, tell her story, and let people know that she's good. Whatever you heard about her in Henniker, New Hampshire, in that house up there, is false.
Right.
I'm where I am. I don't want anybody to know where I am, right? I mean, so we've never disclosed a location, but I think that the case is closed and the family is good. They've always been good. And if anything were to really take off, I think the Keers would have contacted me so we can get the boys down there.
Cindy. Elizabeth Fry asks, have you ever been on an investigation where you didn't get any activity? Not on Holzer Files. We had stuff happen. There were times I felt like we didn't, and we don't know till we go back and review the evidence. Like the Merchant's House Museum felt really dead to me. But we go back and those doors slamming, and you see that stuff play out was weird. But I always point people to the Demon House episode of Ghost Adventures I appeared on. I'm still proud of that episode and stand by it because there's all these claims. I mean, it was like The Exorcist meets Amityville Horror and nothing happened. And I get a cool camera moment where I'm in there challenging the demon. All right, come on, blah, blah, blah. And Zach goes, dude, you're doing my job. What are you challenging him for? I go, if you think for a second I believe there was a demon in this house, I would not be challenging a demon like that. That's how secure I was that this guy was full of shit and shenanigans. So that episode on, and I love the fact that Ghost Adventures aired it with no evidence. We got nothing. So I like that they stayed by it. Let's see. Holly McNally, Dave and Shane, do you guys have rituals or something to cleanse yourselves? We usually take a shower together with soap on a rope right afterwards to keep clean.
It's true. I was there once.
Yeah.
Giving away our secrets.
Chris is great. Getting all that back scrubbed up from. He's good. Let's see. A couple more questions, and then we're going to wrap it up here and let everybody get back to their time. Let me see here. Oh, they're scrolling up too fast. I can't keep up. But all right. Well, Holly says thank you. She likes that story. I actually, yes, we do prayer. We do a lot of prayer, and we do a lot of things like that to deal with negativity and to try to keep ourselves clean. And I know Shane drinks copious amounts of alcohol to keep the spirits at bay.
Before investigation, too.
Yeah.
We like to cleanse everything prior to us going in there and screwing everything up.
And then this is an important question for season 3. Dave and Shane, are you guys going to wear matching kimonos in season 3?
Of course.
Yes. Cindy shouldn't get all of the fashion sense on the show. That's what
I think. That's right. I want to feel.
Cindy looks great.
She does. Kelly's Unexplained asks, are we excited for Texas Paracon? Yes, I'm looking forward to doing that. Again, for people that are interested in seeing Shane and I and Shane, Cindy and I at a few events this year, go check out darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. And you get the update. So Oceanborn Mary, I would say in this one, my takeaway from this episode was the fact that it's really being truthful of what we tell people, what we want people to know, not embellishing. We all have a habit of embellishing things a little bit, but everybody that adds a little bit of that paint on top of it ends up getting farther and farther away from the truth. And if we just take a look at these things and stick with the facts as they're known, like Dr. Holzer would, we get to uncover the truth. And that's what really, I think, helps these souls to settle, is for once, you know, we put it out there. We gave the right answer. So hopefully Mary and Black Bart the pirate and Anne and her husband will have some peace, and everybody can just kind of go back to their world. But now you're aware, if you go to Henniker, New Hampshire, maybe don't spend the money to tour Oceanborn Mary's house if it's ever opened up as an attraction, because you're not going to find a pirate's ghost, and you're not going to find Mary Wallace. She was she's happy living in her old home, and I think that's where she's going to be. Shane, what's your takeaway on this episode?
My takeaway is just letting me know personally how important research is. I think digging deeper and doing your research and actually studying up, especially if you're doing this, you know, you're wanting to make more out of it, you're wanting to be serious about this field. I think from this case, it just shows how important the research aspect of it truly is.
And Chris, thank you again for joining us. Out of all the episodes that you produced in season one, what was your favorite episode?
The episode that we're actually talking about right now. I mean, they were all my favorite episodes for very different reasons, because they were all very different. But Oceanborn Mary, again, it had so many twists and turns, and it kept me and the rest of our team on our feet, even out in the field, you know, while we're shooting it. We unlocked the mystery. So that's what I really love about this case, was that I feel like there was a very definitive ending. You know, we unlocked the mystery that Hans was not able to figure out. And because of, you know, whatever was happening with the families back then, he never really revisited. So we actually revisited it and figured out the mystery of Oceanborn Mary.
Very good. And thank you for your hand in that. We'll talk, because I'm going to need some help on the next two episodes, getting some interesting guests on here. And I'd love to have you come back in. Listen to the best in paranormal talk radio, Darkness Radio, every week. You can find us here on Thursday nights for this live, but check any one of your podcast devices. You'll be able to find the show. Just look up Darkness Radio. You'll see Scully appear on the profile image, so you can make sure that that's the right thing. We'll be back next week talking about Grave Secrets, the haunting of the Howard Dickinson house. So make sure you go watch season one, episode 8 before next week. And you can come see Shane and I at many different live events this year. For more info, visit darknessevents.com. If you'd like more information on Shane, or to get some official hashtag Poor Shane merchandise, or to keep up with his work on The Searchers, they can go check out official Shane Pittman .com. Chris, what are you working on now? Or can you talk about it, or is it all super secret?
You know, I have a podcast. It's not paranormal, but you can check us out at tastefullyinappropriatepodcast.com, where you can get your late night entertainment. Check any one of our podcasts out at Forward Television. And then, you know, we still keep doing our thing. So it was definitely a pleasure to reconnect with you guys, because, you know, we'll never know if we cross paths again. I love the paranormal. I love the paranormal community. And I want you guys to continue to do the great work that you guys do.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. Yeah, we miss you, man. We miss you a lot.
I miss you. I'm always happy when I see text messages from you guys. So thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Except for the dick pic, Shane. Knock it off. Both of us are getting tired of it, all right?
Hey, there's no promises, man.
I solicited it. It's fine.
I don't know if I can quit that.
All right. Well, give our love to Justin Tucker, and to all of you, thank you again for watching the Holzer Files and being so adamant about your love and adoration for the show. Remember, you can keep checking on Thursday nights. We'll be back here next week. We're off because we're in Gettysburg the week after. We're going to do a very special Holzer's Ghosts, the haunting and psychic world of Bishop Pike. Will be that episode in a few weeks. We'll be back again with Well, we've got the episode of the Howard Dickinson House coming up. We've got the Ayers Allen House, and we've got the Barnstable House. So those are our last three episodes from season one. If you've missed any of these retrospects, you can go to my YouTube channel, Darkness Radio YouTube channel, and every episode of season one and season two is up that we've recorded. We did everything from season two, and we're back into season one. We've only got three episodes after tonight. So that's the way to catch up on everything that we're doing and keep up with what's going on. Cindy, we miss you, and we wish you a lot of luck in Turkey, and I hope you're safe out there. We'll talk to everybody else again soon. Thank you for tuning in to the best in paranormal talk radio. For Shane Pittman, Chris Cagle, and Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.